Welcome to this podcast called Curious About Recovery. I am Kirsten Honeyball. I am your host. And in this podcast, I will be diving deep into eating disorders, which are complex and challenging to navigate. So whether you're a sufferer, a professional, a family or loved one of a sufferer, you can join me as I get curious by interviewing professionals, chatting to eating disorder survivors, and sharing my personal experience with an eating disorder so that you can better understand various perspectives, remove stigma, hear inspiring testimonies, and simply get curious about all things eating disorder related. I would like to put out a trigger warning. These episodes explore the topic of eating disorders, and some content may be triggering to listeners. Topics explored may mention, but are not limited to, trauma, diets, food and body types, suicide, mental illness, substance use, self-harm, violence, gender identification topics, and more. Please take care before listening to any episodes. It's important to note that this podcast is not aimed to diagnose, treat, or cure any form of mental illness and should not be seen as a replacement for treatment of eating disorders. Everything said here is expressed in relation to personal and professional opinions, and listeners should be encouraged to view these episodes as an open-minded exploration of various possibilities and perspective rather than hard facts and solutions. Please take what applies or resonates with you and leave the rest. And if you're struggling with an eating disorder, don't hesitate to reach out to me at kirsten@kirstenhoneyball.co.za. Hello and welcome to this episode with Merit Elizabeth. She's joining us from Dallas, Texas, which is awesome. She's a certified eating disorder recovery coach who specializes in the health and wellness of adolescent and young adult women. Throughout her teen years, she struggled with her own eating disorder, which gives her a lot of background into the work that she does. And the treatments that she went through left her feeling isolated and ashamed. Eventually, with a whole bunch of different treatments and daily support of her family, she recovered fully from her eating disorder, which is amazing, and which is why we're going to her today for some advice, personally and professionally. She graduated from Southern Methodist University with degrees in journalism, French studies, and fashion media before pursuing a career in the fashion industry in Los Angeles, which sounds like a dream. While volunteering as a peer mentor with young women struggling with eating disorders, she realized that her true life's purpose was to assist others in finding her recovery, which is something I resonate with so, so much. And so she returned to Dallas to finish her master's degree in health promotion management and a specialized certification in eating disorder recovery coaching through the Carolyn Costin Institute. So if you don't know this institute, it's amazing accreditation where you can get certified as an eating disorder recovery coach. So some of her favorite things include family, friends, food, traveling, and her little cavalier King Charles Spaniels, who she absolutely adores. So welcome. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, it's really, really great to have you here. So as you know, this podcast is just a platform that really aims to not only educate people about eating disorder recovery and about the modalities around eating disorders, but also just to give such personal insight into eating disorder recovery. And the thing about eating disorder recovery, what I have found in my profession is that it is multifaceted. There's so many layers and there's no one size fits all. There's no box that you can put a person into. And so I'm really appreciating getting different perspectives from different people of all walks of life. So would you like to tell me a little bit about what you do and what inspired you to start working how you do, especially this idea of working with adolescents and young women?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, as you said, I'm certified through the Carolyn Costin Institute as a eating disorder recovery coach. So I work with my clients to promote behavior change. And so we set weekly goals and we have weekly sessions where we work from the 8 Keys to Recovery textbook and workbook written by Carolyn Costin. And that's kind of the foundation of what I do as a coach. I struggled with my own own eating disorder for 7 years, anorexia and bulimia throughout high school and college. And so I think that's really the reason that I want to work with adolescents and young women, is because I understand what it's like, the toxic college culture, and I'm really not that far removed from it. I'm 24, so I think I have a pretty good grasp as to what goes on and what behaviors college young women really struggle with.
Sure, that's really amazing. Thinking about some young women that I've dealt with, I haven't really dealt with anyone younger than 17 up until this point, and I find that the sooner you kind of start dealing with it, the better. But at the same time, there's also, I know that people have spoken about the fact that, you know, you need to be a certain age to be able to grasp certain concepts, especially in a kind of mindset, behavioral, neurological sense. I'm wondering, do you find, or have you seen in your experience, that kind of the earlier you nip it in the bud, the more chance someone has of recovering fully? What are your opinions on this?
Absolutely. I think the earlier you can get help, you'll be so much better off in the long run too, especially going from high school to college. I think that's a really, really important time to get help before you're thrown kind of into that volatile environment where you have to make new decisions and where you have so much more freedom.
Okay. And have you ever experienced a situation where a parent comes to you and they're like, you know, this is what my child is struggling with, but maybe the child is still in denial, or maybe doesn't really want to get help, or is still kind of in those teen stubborn years and everything? How do you, as a professional, deal with this with the parent?
A lot of people are in denial. And I think that's because a lot of dealing with eating disorders is you feel a lot of shame and you feel embarrassed to talk about it. And I think that it's really nice that I have that recovered edge, because when I talk to people who might be in denial, I can say, look, you know, I've gone through this. There's nothing to be ashamed of. I've probably had every eating disorder thought that you have, having gone through this for 7 years of my life. And I think it's just really unique to be able to share my experience with someone in that way. And certainly, I mean, a lot of people are in denial. I was probably in denial for a long time, and I think that's natural. It's scary to reach out for help and to be really vulnerable. And so a lot of times I will, after speaking with parents, I will just kind of go talk to their daughter who's struggling and say, you know, you don't have to tell me anything you don't want to tell me, but I just want to let you know that I'm here for you. And then I'll share my experience, and it might kind of help them get out of that denial phase that they're in.
I can completely relate to that, being a professional who has also experienced it. When someone comes to you and you go like, I actually know what you're talking about, and you can't like cover things up. I really know the nitty gritty of it, you know? And I think that's something so valuable, is that we often, as people who struggle with eating disorders, we don't know how to trust someone, because we're like, well, you've never lived in my head. You've never lived in my brain. You don't know what I know. And I guess it's people like yourself and myself who can say, well, actually, I do know, you know?
Another thing is that eating disorder behaviors, actions, thoughts, it is so personal, and it can feel so shameful. So I think that, you know, just being able to say you're recovered, you just get such a leg up in, you know, forming a relationship with that person who's struggling.
What's your personal opinion on why we experience shame to say like, hey, this is a thing I struggle with? Because no one's going to sit there and say, I'm ashamed of experiencing cancer or, you know, diabetes or whatever. So what do you think this shame around eating disorders is about?
Exactly. I think there's such a lack of education about eating disorders in schools that people feel shame to talk about their behaviors, because, you know, there isn't enough education. We need to talk about it more, and we need to be able to, you know, share that there are people that are recovered and can talk to you if you're having these thoughts, these behaviors. I think it all just comes down to the fact that we need more education. We're not as educated as we are on things like cancer, diabetes, other diseases. And talking about mental health in general, it is still kind of taboo.
And it becomes such a fine line to walk, because, I mean, when I was in high school, I was taught about bulimia and anorexia. And we, for our project, we had to go research these things. And I'd never heard of it in my life before. Now, the way we were taught was to go and research these things. And I found pro-ED kind of things on the internet. And my brain went, whoa, there's my answer to all my life's problems, you know? So, I mean, like, there's an attempt to teach adolescents about eating disorder or mental health issues or anything like that, but maybe it's going about it the wrong way. Do you have any thoughts on how we could better address these things in the education field?
I personally think there is still such a lack of education just around body image, eating disorders, disordered eating in general. And I think we need speakers, we need programs in high schools and in universities that focus on these topics.
And I mean, I think you talk about this idea of we need to talk about body image, and not to put you on the spot, but if I were to say, like, you know, if you had 5 minutes to stand in front of a young high school of 1,000 students and you had something you could share with them that could help them improve their body image or kind of connect with what it means to truly accept yourself and your body and love and nourish and all of that stuff, like, what would you say?
I think it's a journey. You don't love yourself or your body overnight, but I think through mindfulness, we can begin to love our bodies and start on this journey. And when I say mindfulness, I mean doing things that really help us stay present and stay connected to who we are, to our soul. And I find that through practicing my spirituality, through meditation, through mindful movement, through prayer.
There's a lot of people who do believe that there's like a spiritual element to recovery from eating disorders. Is that a belief that you hold, and what does that look like for you?
Connecting to my spirituality is probably the greatest thing that helped me to recover. Just understanding that there is something out there that's greater than myself. And I think when we say that, it puts things into perspective, you know, that our eating disorders are so small compared to the world that is so huge, right? And spirituality is a big part of my life. Kind of like I was saying before, I need to incorporate some kind of daily meditation, mindful movement, gratitude practices every day to stay connected to who I am at my core.
It's so wonderful that you said, you know, finding something greater than yourself. I was reading in this book last night, and it's actually just spot on for what you're talking about, is this idea of the word addiction, right? And it's Latin origin. So if you go to the source of the word addiction, it means to give oneself completely to, right? And it used to be used in a spiritual context. So you would become addicted to, well, it wouldn't be the word, it would be a derivative of the word, but it would be, you'd technically become addicted to God or addicted to your spiritual practice or whatever. You would give yourself completely over to this thing. And it just like resonated for me there, because I'm like, in eating disorders, what you've done is you've given yourself completely to this obsession around the body and food and weight and blah, 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 you know? And so you need to give yourself completely over to something else. And that could be spiritual for someone. It could be a God. It could be a deity. It could be a practice. But as long as someone is giving themselves over completely to even the concept of goodness or grace or whatever, you know, so it just... It really, really resonated for me. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, I love that. I had never known that about the meaning of the word addiction before. So I think that's really cool.
So working with adolescents and people who are in youth and all of that stuff, I know earlier you mentioned the kind of high school mentality and that kind of pressure that comes from being a young person. And what have you found that have been the main drivers for people to lose this connection with themselves and resort to behaviors that are controlling their body or food?
Well, I think what I find through every high school girl that I work with is a huge part of it is social media. And I relate to this so much because my eating disorder really started at 14, 15, when Instagram was really becoming cool, when it was really taking off. And I placed so much of my self-worth in the Instagram likes that I received on a certain photo. And it's still the same today. I still see comments, you know, that say, oh, so skinny, your body looks amazing. And I think that body image, our self-worth, it gets so wrapped up in being thin and social media validating that. We need to remember that Instagram, TikTok, whatever, it's a highlight reel. It's not real life and it's not our soul, right? And I think that we get so lost in likes and comments about our bodies, and that plays into the whole body image, you know, which might start an eating disorder. Being thin is not who you are, right? And so I think we kind of lose that in social media.
Obviously, the social media aspect is a huge thing. And there are ways that parents can stand in and put like limits. And I mean, I'm not sure if there's anything with Instagram, but there are ways that parents can kind of help their kids around this area, maybe putting a limit on phone usage or limits on screen time or something like that. But I think the important thing that stood out for me there is that you said, you know, your eating disorder really started to manifest when you were about 14 and social media was becoming huge, right? And I was just like, think about, you know, before that time, do you think that there was a predisposition for yourself? And do you think that that's what happens before someone gets maybe triggered by seeing things on social media and being triggered by life events? So the underlying stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there are a ton of different, you know, risk factors that play into this. I went to an all-girls high school. I was a competitive tennis player. I struggled with OCD. I had high anxiety. So, you know, when you start to look at all that stuff in the background, it really was the perfect storm for an eating disorder.
I mean, if you're sitting as a parent and you're noticing your 14-year-old child starting to move into these kinds of behaviors, thinking, hey, it's positive, she's going to tennis every day for 3 hours, and not actually realizing that that could be a problem. Like, how can parents identify when it's becoming a problem and what can they do?
I think that, you know, when teens are starting to talk about their bodies more, social media more, get help from someone immediately. Don't wait and see if it's a phase or if they get over it. Talk to an eating disorder professional right away. You know, who knows how much that could save your daughter, right? From experiencing a full-blown eating disorder and somewhere down the road in the future.
I know that you spoke about this book that you work, you know, and you do like a week-by-week goal setting and that kind of thing. And I just, I wanted to find out what kind of modalities do you personally work with, or have you found that have been helpful in your approach to eating disorder recovery? And how does that kind of weekly goal setting approach and all of that work for you?
I think that I work a lot with exposure therapy too. So sometimes that looks like grocery shopping, how to fight anxiety and stress in the grocery store. Because as you know, that can be really difficult for someone struggling with an eating disorder. More than grocery shopping, meal support, you know, actually going to a restaurant together to sit down and enjoy a meal. And being with each other long enough to chat after too, to say, you know, how does it feel to sit with food? How does it feel to not be able to purge if that's something you're struggling with? How does it feel that you weren't able to restrict during this meal, and to kind of talk it out? And so I think meal support is really, really important as an eating disorder professional. And maybe it's clothes shopping. Maybe, you know, I'll go travel to do a live-in with someone too. There's so many different things and modalities I can use with my clients, which I think is a really cool part of coaching.
So it's a very hands-on approach. It's like if someone needs you right there with them, you can actually kind of hold their hand and be like, this is how you do it, you know?
Yeah, or text too. That's something that's so awesome. As a coach, I make myself widely available so that my clients can text me 24/7, you know, whenever it is. If you're having a really hard time with lunch, let's hop on a FaceTime or something. Or if you're about to go to a party and you're nervous, right? And how is it going to be with food around? So being able to text someone and get support in that moment is really, really important.
I also make myself available for people outside of that time. And I think that that's kind of where the coach will fill the gap between what a therapist can do and what a coach can do. Maybe you want to just explain to me a little bit about the difference between how a therapist might deal with someone and how a coach might deal with someone.
A coach is really an adjunct to the treatment team. You know, we're not replacing therapists, nutritionists, psychiatrists, whatever, but we're there to support the rest of the treatment team. So I'll talk to the therapist, the nutritionist, and see what goals they're setting. And as a coach, I'll do my best to help assist with those goals with my clients. And I think a really important part of coaching too is Carolyn has trained us to go in and be able to work with therapists and nutritionists, make sure we're all on the same page. And like I said, it's absolutely not a replacement. Those other parts of the treatment team are really, really necessary. And where coaching comes in too is that piece of accountability that therapists and nutritionists can't necessarily do. They can't text their clients, you know, at 6 p.m. on a Friday night, but I can. And so I tell my clients I might not respond if it's like 3 a.m. on a Saturday night, but I'll do my best and I'll get back to you in the morning, right? But I do definitely try to respond as soon as I can when someone is needing help in the moment.
Yeah, I think it's such an important part of recovery. And it's definitely what helped me in my journey was to be able to deal with the problem as it showed up, not like a week later. But then, you know, I needed to deal with it a week later with my therapist so that we could do inner child work and all of that stuff and psychotherapy. And then the coach or the mentor that was with me, I was able to actually say, hey, I was scared of apples today, you know, like, and it's so simple. Yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes too, when you don't discuss it till a week later, it kind of becomes a blur and then it's not as important, right? So being able to discuss in the moment, I think, is huge for eating disorder recovery.
Okay. So would you then say to maybe a parent who's worried about their child who was coming to you, maybe a really useful tool in that child's recovery is to be able to speak up in real time and to have someone there who can support them in that process?
Yes. To reach out to me immediately. And that's what I'll encourage too in our first few sessions is I'll set a goal of reach out to me 2 times. And I know it's uncomfortable. I know it's weird because you don't really know me that well yet, but we need to get you used to reaching out in the moment so we can talk about what's going on in real time.
And what would you say to a client that perhaps isn't finding the will or the ability or the courage to actually have that accountability? So they've said, cool, yeah, I'll reach out to you 2 times a day or 3 times a day or whatever it is that you guys have agreed on. And then you find that they don't do it and they're struggling to kind of open up. What would you say to encourage them or how to support them on through that fear?
Yeah. And I think that's where, you know, feeling ashamed and feeling embarrassed comes in. And I totally relate to that because I'm a really private person too. So texting someone when I really feel the urge to purge, I can see why that would be uncomfortable for someone else because I've been in that position before. And so that's where I'll kind of come to them in the next session and say, there is no need to feel, you know, those feelings of embarrassment or shame because I've been there and I get it. And I'm here to help you recover. But if you can't reach out to me, you know, that's a really important piece of recovering. So we need to work on that. And so then we'll kind of go in and maybe debunk kind of the myths of why they don't want to reach out. You know, we'll talk about the shame piece. Maybe they've reached out to people in the past and it hasn't gone well for them. And so then we'll talk about how as a coach, it's different. You know, you have to give people a second chance. You have to reach out to a different person. You know, if one person that you reached out to, if it didn't work out with them, you know, you have to try again. And as a coach too, I think being able to reach out to me is really, really important.
You mentioned that maybe they have fear because they've reached out to someone before and it hasn't helped. So I find this a lot of the time with people coming to me saying, I've been to this therapist, I've been to this coach, I've been to this hypnotist, I've been to this whatever, and it didn't work, you know. And obviously there's an element of, you know, how ready are you to put in the work? How ready are you to kind of take responsibility for your recovery and all of that? But then there's also the concept of personality matching. So if you have someone that is really, really just zero tolerance, very, very strict, very rules-based, whatever, you might find one person really responds well to that and another person feels completely ridiculed or completely controlled or completely judged or something like that. So would you say that it's important for a person to find the right personality fit in the person, the professional that's helping them?
Yes, 100%. And it's completely normal to not vibe with someone as your coach, and that's fine. And if we don't vibe, then I'll help you find someone else, because that's ultimately, I want you to recover. And if that's not going to happen with me, then I'll help you find someone else that maybe it will happen with.
And you say, I want to help you recover. What is recovery for you? How do you frame that?
That's a great question. I think being fully recovered is not being consumed by your eating disorder behaviors and not wanting to go back to that at all. You know, being able to be a conscious eater too is a huge thing in recovery. Being able to say, I am now so free from eating disorder behaviors that I eat what I want, when I want, you know, obviously keeping in mind nutritional satisfaction and whatever. But I think being a conscious eater is a huge sign of being fully recovered too. So Carolyn explains on her website that when you're recovered, food and weight take a proper perspective in your life, and what you weigh is not more important than who you are. In fact, actual numbers are of little or no importance at all. When recovered, you will not compromise your health or betray your soul to look a certain way, wear a certain size, or reach a certain number on the scale.
Sure. That's really, really powerful.
That's so powerful to say that the scale doesn't define you anymore. When you're fully recovered, it doesn't matter what that number says anymore. And I can personally say I haven't weighed myself in I don't even know how many years now. And it's crazy to think back that I used to place so much self-worth in that number. And it's just a number.
It's so interesting you say placing all that self-worth in the number. So if I think back to my own anorexia and bulimia, I think of when I used to weigh myself literally all the time, and I would notice the tiniest fluctuations. But at the time, I had no idea that I was kind of basing my self-worth on this. It just was a thing that I did, and it was something that I was consumed by. And it's only in hindsight now that I'm able to see, oh, wait, that was actually how I was judging how okay I was inside, you know? Just an interesting side note. Something I wanted to ask you is, like, obviously, as a person who has a history of an eating disorder and someone who has come into full recovery, you know, have you ever experienced moments or times where you've maybe like had an off day or a bad day or whatever? And in those times, how do you get through that?
Yeah, I think that as a recovered professional, I've never ever wanted to go back to eating disorder behaviors, but I think that everyone has bad body image days. And when I do, I think I just have to remember that I'm so much more than my body, right? And I am my soul. I have to remember who I am at my core, and the number on the scale, you know, what I look like in the mirror, that doesn't matter.
Super powerful when you said, you know, I am my soul. And that's you could like write a book called I Am My Soul, you know. And I think that that's such an important theme in eating disorder recovery, is that just there's this absolute disconnect from one's true essence, one's soul, one'sness, if you want to call it that. So what do you think you could give as words of encouragement to someone who is that disconnected, doesn't know who they are, doesn't know who their soul is, doesn't know, you know, up from down? And like, how do you kind of support a person like that?
That's such a good question. I think that we have to practice mindfulness every day in order to figure out who we are at our soul. We have to have meditation in order to tap into, you know, the silence, listening to what our soul is saying. And another thing for me was yoga was really helpful in finding who I was. Having that mind-body-soul connection, I really found that through yoga, that mindful movement, and being so appreciative of what my body can do for me, and also remembering that this is just my earth suit, as Carolyn says. You know, it's not who I am.
So, I mean, this is also another on-the-spot question, but if I could ask you, you know, who are you? Can you tell me a little bit about that, and like on a soul level?
When you say who are you, I think the first thing that comes to mind is I am Merit. But it's so much more than that. It's I'm kind. I'm patient. I'm a daughter. I'm a sister. I'm a friend. I'm a coach. And even that still is not who I am. I think that, you know, it's more I'm patient and I'm kind is probably the better answer to that.
Yeah. So it's like who you are at your core in terms of attributes that you portray in the world and that you show up as, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's super cool. I just want to ask you, what is the biggest piece of advice you could give someone wanting to recover from an eating disorder?
I think that every day you have to wake up and visualize yourself as a recovered person, and you have to attach a feeling to that as well. How will you feel as a recovered person? And how will you think as a recovered person? What will you do? And I think every day, every morning, you need to look in the mirror and, you know, visualize that and then show up as that person in your daily life.
Oh, I absolutely love that. I got goosebumps when you said it, because that's exactly what I did for myself. I would close my eyes and I would picture myself eating the food that I needed to eat and loving my body. And then the fact that you said look in the mirror, that's wonderful as well, because that's how I gauge how I'm doing mentally on a day-to-day basis. If I can look myself in the eye in the mirror, then I find I'm in a good space. And at the moment where I catch myself going, I can't look at myself in the mirror, in like I can't make eye contact with myself today, then I'm like, hey, wait a second. Maybe I should take a step back and check what's going on and deal with that. So it's a really, really beautiful way to say it. And I definitely think that if you listening to this podcast and you do struggle with an eating disorder, visualization in the morning and the ability to look yourself in the eye and decide how you want to show up in that day is so, so valuable. And I think it's possible for everyone as well. In your own healing journey, what was your greatest realization or aha moment?
I think that in my healing journey, I had felt so trapped in my eating disorder. I felt like my eating disorder was entirely who I was, and I didn't know how I could change and be someone else. And so one of my greatest role models is Dr. Joe Dispenza. He's a neuroscientist, and he talks about how our personality creates our personal reality. And we have to look at our behaviors, our actions, our thoughts that we have every single day and realize that that's creating our personality. That's creating who we are. So we have to be able to change those behaviors, those thoughts. And we can absolutely do that. And I think that's so powerful to say that, you know, we can change our personality. We can shift into another person if we don't like who we are. We can always change.
That's interesting. Do you feel that it's, you know, change the behavior, then the thoughts, or change the thoughts, then the behavior? I mean, I have a personal opinion, but it's always wonderful to hear what people think.
I think that we have to change the thoughts first. We have to change the way that we're thinking about things.
How does someone change a thought?
Well, I think through visualization is huge. Visualizing who you are, who you want to be, and showing up as that person, thinking about the person that you want to be, and constantly thinking about that will change the rest of your thoughts and your actions.
Okay, so it's a committed practice to think. Joe Dispenza says about rewiring as well, you know.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. Rewiring your brain, reframing your thoughts.
I love him as an author and as a speaker as well. So, I mean, you've definitely touched on a lot of really important topics, you know, what parents can do if they see that their teenagers are moving into disordered eating behaviors, you know, how a person who is a teenager can reach out and how they need to put the shame aside so that they can actually really say, this is what I'm struggling with and I'm not okay. And know that there's support, and not only support from people who've read about this stuff in books, but support from people who've walked the walk and lived that journey and experienced those thoughts and feelings, and who've come out on the other side with solutions and with full recovery. And that's just so important to understand that it is possible. It's been so lovely having you on this episode. And I just want to end off with asking you if there's anything else that you feel that's important that should be shared, that people can benefit from, any of your thoughts or ideas or tips or quotes or anything.
I just want to end by saying, you know, if you're struggling, you're not alone, and you don't need to feel embarrassed or ashamed to get help. You know, reach out. because you deserve a life of full recovery. And it's 100% possible to make that happen.
Oh, that's so inspiring. And how can we find you? Your socials, websites, what do you offer? Just tell me a little bit about the business side of you.
Well, I do one-on-one coaching and I have teen support groups that I host. My Instagram and my website is Merit Elizabeth Recovery. Everything's the same name. And so that's pretty much how you can find me.
Thank you so, so much for being on today's podcast. And I'm super excited to keeping in touch and networking in future with you. So thank you.
Yeah, me too. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to today's podcast. If you have liked it, share it with people who you think might benefit from listening to it as well. Don't forget to go to my Instagram page called @curiousaboutrecovery to find out about upcoming episodes or to browse the episodes of the past. You can also follow my page called @KirstenHoneyball where you can get inspiration for your eating disorder recovery.